uniforms, and these corporations thought that was acceptable. The women and the children have no control over their lives. Everything is regimented. What time they get up, what they eat, the food is very bad, the medical care is substandard. Guards, just like when we litigated at Hutto, as I said, which was the last version of family detention, women have told us that they have been threatened that if their children misbehave, they'll be reported to the immigration judge, that it can negatively affect their case. Children who get out of line, and of course, these are young children. How can you, you know, have children running around that don't stay in line? We had a mother with a baby that was learning to crawl, and that baby was not allowed on the ground because the guards at GEO said that that was unsafe. She was forced to carry a baby around, which, of course, has terrible developmental effects for a child who's trying to learn to crawl.
Barbara Hines, we have to leave that here, but we're going to do part two of the conversation and post online at democracynow.org, especially what happens in the courtroom when the women see the judge through a video screen from prison. Barbara Hines, former director of the Immigration Clinic at University of Texas Law School, and Renee Feltz, thanks so much, and thanks to Tish Stringer for her video. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Kirk, Renee Feltz, Aramata, and Shakes, Steve Martinez, and Alcalfani Massoud. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Paul Rowland.
Tune in Wednesdays for an afternoon of jazz. Hosts of Jazz Lives, A Jazz World, and Jazz in the Afternoon play the very best in jazz music. From the historical to the present, and jazz of all stripes. Swinging, smoking, bluesy, funky, new and old, but all good. That's Wednesday afternoons from noon to 4 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film Occupy the Farm, playing at the Clinton Street Theater Thursday, April 2nd at 6:30 p.m.
Our main concern is water right now.
The university actually shut off our water.
What we're going to be doing is handing buckets over the fence.
Occupy the Farm tells the inspiring story of 200 farmers who occupy the last piece of farmland in California's urban East Bay, planting 15,000 seedlings to feed the community and disrupt plans to build a shopping mall. That's Occupy the Farm, Thursday, April 2nd, 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Don't say what you mean. That's Drinking from Puddles, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Yeah.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland. And my name's Paul. I am your host for the next hour until 9 o'clock, which time we have political perspectives. And this morning we'll hear Mind Talk with host Dr. Pamela Brewer. Today's guest is Dr. Alice Boys. They'll talk about anxiety and how to deal with it. Coming up at 9 o'clock here on KBOO. And yeah, that was just Jefferson Airplane, When the Earth Moves Again. Good song for spring. I played that because I just happened to watch a documentary on the Jefferson Airplane on YouTube called Fly Jefferson Airplane. It was pretty good. It certainly gives you a feel of those times. And I know I've talked over the past year or more that I've been doing this show about the idea that, you know, the uprisings of the 1960s, the worldwide uprisings, were basically, we're still living in the reaction to that. And of course, as part of a much, 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 much older tug and pull of forces that we're going to get into a little bit this morning. But specifically, you know, the uprising, the challenge to the, wasn't just a challenge to the established order as we think of it in terms of government. There's much, much deeper challenges that were going on in the 60s, a whole wide variety of currents, from the arising of the ecology movement, the women's movement challenge to patriarchy, the gay liberation movement challenge to heteroorthodoxy, et cetera, et cetera. And all kind of converging, conflicting with each other, bouncing off each other. But the main thing I took out of that film, Fly Jefferson Airplane, was sort of what I experienced at the very, very tail end of the 60s was just that breath of collective liberation and creation of collective space, and people really freeing or sincerely trying to free their minds from the ironclad rules of rational industrial thinking that has taken such a hold. Anyway, the reaction to that was, of course, Reaganism, was the neocon revolution, and despite, you know, numerous Democratic Party functionaries taking the reins at various times, that neocon reaction really hasn't abated in any significant way. Anyway, if these and other things strike your fancy during this hour, please give a call at 503-231-8187. That's the number to call in. You know, I've been having, for quite a number of weeks, I've been having guests talking about very intense issues confronting us here in Portland and Cascadia, whether it's the Pembina propane terminal, whether it's the oil trains. We talked about Fukushima a couple weeks ago. And we all know that there are many, many dire issues that we have to deal with. The mind-numbing continuing of shooting down people, mostly black people, by the police. Anybody who watches Cop Block, God, I just watched a video the other day of basically like a execution-style killing. About six cops just unloaded must have been about 36 shots. This poor black man, forget where that was. It's hard to continue to wake up and feel a sense of empowerment, sense of being able to change things. But there are a lot of movements rising up, movements continuing, and that's what we try to do here on KBOO anyway. try not to make it too heavy. We try to bring you lots of different perspectives, bring you good music, lots of culture here, what's going on in town in terms of music, in terms of art, in terms of theater. But we also do try to confront directly the realities that are confronting us. So what I've tried to do in the past is try to get a little bit deeper into sort of a more holistic, a deeper look at the origins of this crisis we're in. And that's what I'd like to do a little bit here this morning with some readings and some reflections. I saw another video recently about the, I don't know if anybody knows about Göbekli Tepe, the Mesolithic stone temple found in southern Turkey near the border of Syria. But anyway, I've had this idea for a while, and this Göbekli Tepe, and I read a book on this called The Stone Age Religion of Göbekli Tepe. And I've been delving into this for quite a while, reading John Zerzan, reading Derek Jensen, reading Stanley Diamond, reading anthropologists, trying to get at the riddle of the origins of the patriarchal, hierarchical civilization that we live in that is dominating us. And again, you know, whether there's people have lots of different opinions about the efficacy or the importance of doing this work of, is it just mental game playing, trying to, just curiosity, trying to find out the origins of human civilization, or does it really come to bear on what's in front of us? And if you read people like Derek Jensen, if you read people like John Zerzan, Shelis Glendening, some of these others who are attempting to talk about these things, what they say is that the origins really set the stage for where we are now. And in order to undo some of the damage that's been done, we need to, it's kind of like a disease, like the etiology of a disease. You have to find out the source of the disease in order to try to cure it. And of course, there's many different ways of looking at how to deal with the disease. Some people say we just need to have a revolution and overturn and cut out the disease. Some people say we need to heal ourselves from this trauma. But I think it is important to look at the origins of it. So anyway, going back to Göbekli Tepe, this documentary that I just saw called Göbekli Tepe, there's a period where they talk about the it's a very, very involved documentary. It talks about for a number of different interesting thinkers in astronomy and physics, the history of religions, and they talk about how basically it's a 12,000 year old temple, and it really seems to be revolutionizing, creating a whole new way of looking at the origins of human civilization. And in it, they basically, this one guy who's from Turkey, who's been studying this, he's from a museum there in Turkey, he quotes Gordon Child, who's an author. He said, God, what ruins everything is someone claiming God's land, that this is God's land, this is mine, and the rest say, yes, it is yours. And the claimant goes on to say, God gave me the authority and you will work for me, and everybody believes it. So basically, the idea is that this temple that was built by who knows exactly who was built according to the orders of some patriarchal figure. And that was kind of the origins of everything that we have since. Anyway, I'm kind of losing myself a little bit here. If you want to call in and share your thoughts, the number is 503-231-8187. And we do have one caller. Go ahead. You're on the air. Mimi.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Mimi.
And I'm really enjoying your show this morning already, and it's only been 15 minutes. I just wanted to say that you're so right. We have to get to the source of the disease. And so often the source of the disease is that patriarchal religion or religious attitude that creates war. And until that's really addressed without fear, we can't really have a discussion about it because people are so afraid to talk about religion as a source of war. And I can't really think of many wars out there. I can't think of one that really doesn't have a base or a source in religion. Maybe there are. I'm not an expert on wars. And I haven't lived all that long, but I don't really know of any. But anyway, I also wanted to say that in dealing with it, in dealing with power, I just wanted to say that one of the things that I feel so strongly about with all the things you started the show with, you know, all of these terrible things that are happening to all of us in the planet right now, is to be the change. It's not just a saying, you know, it's do something. There's so many things that you can do to take part, and so many cable listeners are already doers. But to those who, of anybody, of any neighborhood, of any community, especially in Portland and Cascadia, who haven't done anything, like gone out, not just to march, but to look into how to deconstruct the efforts of the patriarchal, you know, anti-Earth regimes. There are so many ways that we can take part in doing that, taking down a nuclear power plant. There are ways to take down the coal, you know, corporation. There are so many things that can be done. So I just want to encourage that people look into how can you actually do something. And there are thousands of different ways that you can do things. And I just wanted to put that in to have everybody feel powerful against all of this major atrocity that's coming down and hitting us constantly with everything that you listed at the top of the show, Paul.
Indeed, indeed. And I thank you for those thoughts. But I mean, let's if you're interested in exploring this a little more, I know I didn't have it as fully prepared as I had wanted to. This is a show I've been wanting to do for quite a while. I've sort of done it in various versions, and it probably would have been better to have gotten a little bit better narration. But so the idea of religion causing war. So what the idea that this book or this documentary on Göbekli Tepe and the book I read and a lot of this other stuff is trying to get at is what is the origin of religion itself, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, so like, okay, religion being the source of war, what does that actually mean?
Well, to me, what it means is the patriarchal word, okay? So you have people saying, it's my way. Just look at, you know, Ted Cruz, for example. It's my way, and if you aren't with my way, then you don't even belong anywhere on this planet, and we'll do everything we can to rid you of, you know, of being here. We'll create laws against you. That's religious rhetoric, and it just goes back to the beginning of time. You know, I think my way, whatever my way is. Somebody had this idea. It's my way. Make a fire my way.
Well, I don't know if it goes back to making a fire. I mean,
I'm just saying.
Well, again, a lot of people don't really share my passion, perhaps my obsession for this idea of origins, specific, definite, particular origins, instead of sort of like some idea that it started somehow. But so the idea of Göbekli Tepe is that I have anyway. So basically, it emerges from the you know, the hunter-gatherer bands, which by all accounts were, you know, relatively egalitarian. They were small scale. They were face to face. Basically, there was apparently relative equality of the gender sexes. That there was no institutionalized leadership. There was no, you know, one person imposing their authority and will, it seems like, from, again, and this is it's difficult to talk about the deep past because we don't, you know, we weren't living then. But, you know, based upon studies of, you know, existing and, you know, in the past 200 years of people having, you know, civilized people having contact, that those hunter-gatherer cultures or horticulture were relatively egalitarian and didn't have the kinds of, you know, this is my way that you're talking about. And so they didn't have that kind of institutionalized religion. They had a much more fluid, as some people talk about it, a kind of the flux idea of, you know, that people were living within a fluid environment and they weren't institutionalizing and reifying and rigidifying it. And so that arose at a particular time. And the idea that seems to be emerging by some people anyway is that it started at this one place, which is kind of a crazy thought, Göbekli Tepe, which is why I'm doing a lot of research. I would encourage other people too to do that research. So, you know, that idea of religion and this these kind of ceremonies with a priestly, the establishment of a priestly caste that led to, you know, the pyramid complex and these others, that seems to be the origin of it. And what good that does it, I'm not sure. I'm just sort of putting it out there. Anyway, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think that what happened after the period that you're speaking of, or during that period, is at some point people break away from community. They break away from the fire, from the whole. And they start to have, let's just say, smaller fires. And eventually we end up with the, you know, small families rather than community coming around the fire altogether. And I think at that point is where the mind changes from the whole to separate pieces. And what do I need for this smaller fire over here? And at that point, and I don't know, like you, I don't know, you know more than I do, but at that point, we're no longer community-based. And it's at that point that the I starts to interact. What can I do for my family? Rather than what can I do for the whole, what can I do for the community? That's how I see it breaking down. And I don't know the time frame. Ice Age, you know, after Ice Age, I don't know. But that is how I see it, moving away from the fire and making individual fires for the individuals at that fire, no longer concerning yourself with the whole, with everybody coming to the table, to the fire, together.
Mm-hmm. And again, these are difficult things at 8:24 in the morning. But you know, I was thinking before I yesterday, when I was thinking about trying to do this show, that it really should be like late in the evening or maybe like after midnight. But maybe when people are more awake, more reflective, perhaps. But anyway, thank you so much for calling, Mimi. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
And it looks like we have one more caller. James, you're on the air.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, so, yeah, I'm definitely enjoying this topic, and it's one that I definitely enjoy discussing with people. I think one of the things that people miss is that the Christian church itself was considered a cult for I want to say it's at least a couple hundred years before Emperor Constantine got a hold of it, decided it was the best thing to sliced bread. But... you know, but realizing that the Christian religion, more specifically Roman Catholicism, which is where this whole idea of conquering in the name of Christ comes from, that they actually borrow a lot of their symbolism and a lot of their rites from Kabbalism, which is considered rabbinical heathery within traditional Jewish community. So even when Christ was about, he was considered a heathen because he adhered to a lot of the mysticism of the Kabbalah. And so somewhere along the line, it just, you know, it moved, and it worked really well in small cell churches because that's how the original church was formed. But, you know, once Constantine got a hold of it and institutionalized it, that's when it all went downhill. And now there's a lot of imbalance in the world is because people have been told that in order to worship Christ that they have to give up their culture, that they have to give up that very thing that has defined them since the beginning of time. And it's just, it's caused so much confusion and pain, and, you know, I'm just, I don't know, I see a lot of that, and, you know, there's a lot of smaller groups of people who are fusing, you know, who've over the last few hundred years, I mean, specifically African-American slaves who fuse aspects of Christianity, aspects of Judaism with their own African traditions that they brought over to create something even more powerful that that includes and accepts other things. But it's, you know, people want to say that, oh, you know, it's well, that's magical and that's the devil. And it's like, you know, the roots of Roman Catholicism are in a sense magic.
Okay, I think we're going kind of a little far afield. Of course, I was pretty far afield from the very get-go. But no, that's okay. I mean, I want to pick up on a couple of threads, and the challenge that Christianity presented, because basically this guy, I base a lot of my thinking on this guy Carl Luckert, who wrote this book, The Stone Age Temples of Göbekli Tepe, and he has this he puts out this very long arc of historical view with these major phases. And the transition from the Paleolithic to the Neolithic is a very fundamental one. But then there's other kind of time periods that are kind of these watershed moments. But basically, his idea is that something happened, sort of a social psychic mutation in human society and human consciousness that just created, sort of crystallized these new social forms of social organization. And specifically, you know, with the rise of the Neolithic time period and the rise of agricultural-based civilization and basically, you know, imperial civilization, which obviously Rome was one, it created these reactions to that because it forces human consciousness in a direction against the free-flowing and liberating modalities and towards this sort of basically ironclad of obeying the orders, obeying, you know, marching in line, building the pyramids together, building the great irrigation works, you know, building the Roman roads, building the walled cities, you know, the slavery. So, you know, then there's these reactions to it. There's people who live outside of that continually because there's large areas of the world that are not under the imperial domination. But even within the imperium or the colonies, like Palestine was a colony of Rome, there's these, you know, reactions, anti-colonial or whatever. And Jesus is apparently, if one believes this, was basically a reaction, basically a refusal of that whole dominating mentality. And that's, you know, really caught on. And the whole move towards these small, as you said, cult-like, you know, that's has a very weighted idea in our current terminology. There's a very negative connotation, but it basically means these small, supportive, nurturing groups that recreate that kind of clan or extended family feeling of, you know, what I call the earlier hunter-gatherer, that kind of need to establish that kind of cohesion, that kind of nurturing support. I believe that's what the movement was all about. And of course, then it was both suppressed, but then, as you said, incorporated by Constantine into the imperial structure itself, which basically succeeded in reinforcing the structure. That's what happens. There's this continual like reaction to these large patriarchal institutionalized forms, and then they're either destroying them or reincorporating them back in, which is, again, what happened after the 60s, was a sort of co-optation of all that liberating energy.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing that a lot of Christians don't recognize is that, you know, the end times, what everybody wants to refer to as the end times, I mean, every culture has had theirs. But it was really only the imperial colonizing nations that came up with the end times, because most places lived in a perpetual state of cyclical motion. You know, it's like people, you know, before we live by this artifact we know as time, we live by the movement of the seasons. And so this idea of end times is pretty new. And, you know, and I really have a hard time with people who talk about the end times, because then what that does is, you know, it kind of removes us from our primitive way of thinking, which isn't necessarily bad, but it's what's in our DNA, and it kind of takes us away from what we need to be doing to make sure that the next generation has something. And it all plays into that imperial colonial state of mind that we need to be conquering for something, whether it's for, you know, for Ragnarok, or, you know, or for the apocalypse, you know. But it's all a part of that colonial mentality. I'm glad that you're having a conversation that's addressing it, even if it's not quite 9 o'clock yet.
Okay, well, thank you, James.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, man.
All right, because I see we have a couple more callers before we go to our next caller. I did mention that at 9 on Political Perspectives, we'll hear Mind Talk with host Dr. Pamela Brewer. Today's guest is Dr. Alice Boyes. They'll talk about anxiety and how to deal with it. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia with cutting-edge news, views, interviews, and just plain horse sense with Chris Andre. At 10:15, we'll hear Flashpoints, investigative news journalism with host Dennis Bernstein. And today we'll hear about Obama's drone program in Yemen. Plus, we'll recognize the 50th anniversary of the Freedom of Information Act. And finally, we'll talk about the privatization of America. At 11 o'clock, it's a Recovery Zone with host Stephanie Potter. Today's guest is solar consultant Jesse Hunter, who will talk about climate change and the latest innovations that can help mitigate our effect on the environment. Portland area weather today is rain with high near 61, mostly cloudy with a low around 46. And thank everybody who supports KBOO. We really appreciate it. And if you haven't supported us financially, you would like to, you can go to kboo.fm and click on the tip jar. And we are talking about some vast subjects. And I did want to talk about decolonization, because that's what gets to right here, right now. We are living on occupied land, and that, you know, can become sort of this sort of a ritualistic statement, but it actually is true. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about these police killings and, you know, probably watching way too much these videos that pop up, you know, on my Facebook page. For my own good, because, you know, obviously, you know, there isn't like one every day here in Portland where I live. So it's kind of like it's sort of a somewhat skewed view of reality, since, you know, you're taking into account, you know, a huge population, a huge landmass where these things occur. But they are occurring just about every day in the United States. And anyway, I was thinking, well, what is this mentality? You know, what is going on here? Of course, racism. You know, what is racism? Why this fear of people with dark skin color for those of us with light skin color? What is going on? You know, this is something that we can't get into the way I'd like to here right now, because we're talking about something slightly different. But, you know, the phrase Americaners came into my mind a few months ago, you know, corresponding to Afrikaners. And because the idea came to my mind because, you know, there's like, you know, the United States, South Africa, and Israel are like the three paradigmatic settler colonial states, you know, and there's a similar psychology going on. Of course, South Africa no longer has the Afrikaners in charge, but they're still socially, historically, psychically scarred by that entire experience, as are all areas where colonization took place. So, you know, there's this mentality of sort of just this in-group, you know, both sort of an idea of superiority, but idea of being surrounded and being besieged And like the idea of gated communities, of walled cities, again, this goes back to the, you know, this old history that we're talking about. It just keeps, it keeps perpetuating itself, and it keeps spreading, and we have to get at the root of it somehow. So we need to decolonize ourselves. And, you know, the thing we can do, there are stuff we can do interpersonally and personally and within our own psyches. I think we do need support groups to do this. I think consciousness raising groups like happened in the 60s in the feminist movement are really important tools. And I think that's what I would like to move towards. But, you know, I'm not the only one, so let's hear what other people have to say. Steve, are you with us, our engineer?
Who? We have Linda.
Linda, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Paul. This is Linda. You know, I appreciate the show. I missed the first part. And when I turned on, you were saying, what are the origins of religion? And you were asking that question. And for me, it's almost a silly question in that I believe that the origins of religion are naturally arising out of human connection and human and animal connection and being alive on this planet, and that it arises naturally. The distortion of it into the main method of social control is not uncommon, but I don't think it. I think the social control also has within it many other factors that are based and pretty important, like property relations. I believe Marxism-Leninism believes that these things arose out of property relations. Once people owned something, once people began to believe that ownership was natural, and began to, you know, and that starts with when we settled down anywhere and we began to say individual ownership. And I also think the thing about us, how we look at each other, is naturally arised out of who we are genetically. I don't think that ends up being in warfare. Like our closest known relatives genetically in the animal world don't really wage war. They've examined chimpanzees all over the world, and where there may be, there are hierarchy, there is dominance and lack of dominance, but there isn't warfare. There have been very rarely cited anything like large groups of chimpanzees coming together to kill other large groups of chimpanzees. So there's been a distortion in who we are. And the larger the social structure seems to get, the more possible that is, because more rigid the rules are to hold all of those people together. Well, so I don't think those rules are inherently religious. I think religion, it's as man tries to put a description, or woman tries to put a description to that spiritual experience that they're experiencing.
Yeah.
And then people try to come together and form up a set of beliefs to describe that. I think almost as soon as you try to describe it, it's not it anymore.
No, I hear what you're saying. I mean, obviously, some people use religion for these big hierarchical institutionalized religion, so that, you know, one can agree with that statement. But, you know, obviously the idea of religiosity or spirituality, you know, and those aren't necessarily interchangeable, is you're kind of getting at this sort of the idea of a more general, like religion as a relationship to, you know, the cosmos or the universe or, you know, whatever, like
the mystery. Or the experience that people seem to have, that there's something larger that connects
right.
us than just ourselves, that there's something beyond the immediate physical manifestation. And you often hear people experience it when they're with a birth or when they're with a death.
Right.
I'm talking about people have a direct experience that isn't something that seems to arise out of the physical.
Right. I guess what Mimi was saying, who was the person who said that, you know, war is born in religion, I believe, not to speak for her, but I think she was referring to that sense of religion, like large hierarchical, patriarchal, institutionalized religions. I believe that's what she was saying.
And I think those arose out of man living together and trying to come to an agreement about an experience they have that isn't really something you can put into words and make an agreement. And then they try to make those social rules that we all have so that I can get along with you living right beside me. they try to give them the weight or the authority of that something larger than themselves. And yes. Off you go. You know, you've given it God.
Well, I don't know if you heard my whole right. I don't know if you heard my whole take. You know, on this. This.
Oh, did I? Good.
This, well, wait, I don't know
but
if you.
I heard... don't think religion is a source. Hold... I mean, I think it's no more the source.
Right, right, right. But wait. I was just going to say. So you talked about property relations and individual ownership and the origins. I don't know if you heard my whole take on this temple. Hold on. This whole temple complex, Göbekli Tepe in southern Turkey, which some people are claiming. Was actually that area of southern Turkey, you know, it's right in the heart of the Fertile Crescent, was where domestication began, right? Okay. It's where the domestication of cereals and the first major animal species, all of that took place in that same area, and the first Neolithic sites that we know of, I can't remember their names, but are within like a 50 to 100 square mile. Radius of that. So the idea is that this temple, and this is a very controversial, and it's all very new. This is only in the past like 15 years that the archaeological research has happened. And actually the guy just died yesterday, Carl Schmidt, the German archaeologist who excavated this site. Again, Göbekli Tepe, Göbekli Tepe. And the idea is this was 12,000 years ago. This is the first temple complex ever discovered, right? And the idea is this was where the transition from, quote, Paleolithic to Neolithic actually took place. And the domestication of species and agriculture and all that came from that place. This is you know, it's
not... I would have trouble with that. I would believe that maybe for large portions of world's population that might have been the start, but we're now finding literally human species that have generated from some other place, including Indonesia, the small one. And I
right,
don't
no, no, we're
think
talking about...
that we probably developed agriculture or fire or any of those things in only one place.
Well, no, the evidence actually is that the domesticated species that we know of today arose in Mesopotamia, in that area. That, I mean, unless you have some other, you know, scenario, some other evidence, you can put that forward.
Domesticated species of what? I have read about many of, I can tell you about the third species of human. There was Neanderthal.
No, I'm talking about food. I'm talking about animal food species and plant food species that were domesticated there in Mesopotamia, in the Fertile Crescent area. The cow.
And so are you buying the how they got to this continent was the bridge across, land bridge across? See, I have a different story about the origins of mankind and that there were many origins of mankind, and I can't pull out all the science for you, but I've been basing it on modern science.
Okay, well,
and bodies they found and where they found those bodies and how they are basically modern human, but a different one than us.
Well, I just think we were talking about different things here. I'm talking about
I'm trying to get to the very origins of it, and I don't believe we all came out of one location on this planet.
No, I'm talking about the kind of human civilization that led to the Sumeria, Assyria, Egypt, Rome, Greece. I'm talking about that trajectory
that very specific. Uh-huh.
Right. That led to the control domination system that we live in today that had a specific origin. That's what I'm laying out. I could be wrong. I'm just saying this is a very revolutionary idea that I think, you know, needs to be discussed because it has serious ramifications for us. So I'm saying
I think you're right that it's important, and it is important to keep looking and finding the discoveries and try to understand at what point mankind in different locations, you know, when did we begin to choose things that are as large and as distant? Because, you know, the killing of our animal, brothers and sisters is hot and immediate. It isn't planned and distant. And that's a very different thing. And if you're saying that a bunch of that arose out of that area for a large part of what we've called civilized world, I'm not disputing that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, because we have a couple more callers. Before we go to Mark, I just want to, you know, just sort of reiterate what I'm attempting to do with this program is to talk about some at least one specific scenario that I've come across that I think is very interesting. And again, in an hour show, it's kind of impossible to do this. But I'm not disputing that the origins of Homo sapiens, or the origins of the human species, is not what I'm talking about here. I'm not saying that different, the origins of fire is much, much, much older. And that's another part of our story that it might be important to discuss. I'm talking about the origins of domestication and hierarchical civilization. And of course, the, civilizations that arose in the Americas is another story. And some people have various views of that, which we could get into, but and the differences between different forms of social organizationship, sort of decentralized horticulture, village culture, hunter-gatherer culture, as opposed to large centralized tributary kinds of civilization. Anyway, these are all vast subjects. What I'm saying is that we need to shake ourselves from it, both collectively in terms of the institutions of the nation state, the corporation that are destroying us and everything that we hold dear, and interpersonally in our relationships that are still dominated by private property and commodities, and in our own psyches, how we, our own psyches are dominated by certain ways of thought, modes of thought that are inculcated by this deep historical process. Anyway, again, this is very early for this conversation. I just had to kind of pull out all the stops and try this. It's an experiment. And let's go to Mark.
Good morning, Paul.
Hi.
Thanks for a very insightful discussion. From my perspective, we're ruled by Humpty Dumpty. Words mean what I say they mean. And now today, when the two Republican budget proposals are being debated, I really feel like Alice in Wonderland falling down the rabbit hole. I wanted to emphasize two great resources in healing or correcting our consciousness, in filling us with a certain desire for alternatives. One is the website Hulu.com, where you can watch free movies, including We're Not Broke, War Made Easy, The Flaw, and Michael Moore's Capitalism, A Love Story. And in Capitalism, A Love Story, you're presented with FDR's Economic Bill of Rights, which is very exciting, and of course it's been totally repressed by the corporate media. The other incredible resource is OpenCulture.com, where you have 700 free movies, including Macbeth, Hamlet, Slacker, Hitchcock, and also 700 ebooks, including Dostoevsky's 19-page Dream of a Ridiculous Man.
Uh-huh.
So I really recommend this. Also, you can listen and watch Alan Watts' Conversations with Myself. Incredibly insightful. Unfortunately, only the people who were living in the Bay Area know Alan Watts.
Yeah, he used to be on KPFA early on, yeah.
Yes, that's right. He's written many incredible books, and he calls into question our whole materialistic consumer culture. I mean, to me, it's financial capitalism, finance capitalism, which dehumanizes and destroys the environment, and should be debated and questioned, of course, after the meltdown in 2008. And this is my project as a German translator, and it should fill us all with a desire for a more human future, where there's a generalized security and a generational sharing. I mean, there are ways to do this, and eliminating the cap on Social Security and rescheduling student loan debts would be two important ways to create public spirit,
Okay.
So,
well, thank you much.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
And Of course, finance capitalism is sort of hyper-capitalism, which arose out of industrial capitalism, which arose out of mercantile capitalism, which arose out of tributary feudalism, which arose out of, you know, and again, I hate to harp on this point, but that's kind of the point of this program, after all, was it does have an origin point. And to what extent that helps us in fight it, I'm not sure, but I think it does. And it's really ironic, it's really strange. I find it sort of cosmic that as we, you know, as this whole system sort of is basically eating the basis of its own survival, it arose out of this sort of grace period after the last ice age, in this remarkable window, this strange confluence of forces, evolutionary, cultural, and geological forces that sort of came together that led to the rise of this strange mutant form of human organization called civilization. And it flowered within this time period. It was allowed to flower because of the climatic conditions and because of the way that humans had developed. And that, again, that's a deeper part of the story, that, you know, the whole evolution of flint technology, which led to greater ability to hunt. And at the time period, at the end of the last ice age, there's a human population explosion. We overhunted the animals, and that led to the need to domesticate species. That's basically the scenario laid out in this Göbekli Tepe scenario. It basically, that is the origins of what we're living today. But as this whole thing sort of carries on to sort of basically cosmic dimensions of disruption of basic life processes with global climate change, is basically we're not just impacting local ecosystems. We're not just, you know, not just have setting up for like the fall of individual civilizations. We're potentially setting up for the fall of planetary civilization by the disruption of the global biosphere at this point. But at the same time as all that is coming down, there's this sort of parallel trend as we're coming to know the very origins of this process. So this is a very paradoxical, strange kind of thing that's happening. It strikes me that way anyway. But it looks like we do have one more caller potentially. Go ahead, Boris, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Fascinating conversation, and one that I have ruminated on often over the years. I challenged Derek Jensen one time to speculate on why we are here, that age-old question. When you look at the situation of human beings on this planet, we don't really seem to fit in very well with the scheme of things that that exist here. And so I challenged him to speculate on why we're here. And he pretty much avoided the challenge. But in the process of his avoidance, this was at a public lecture, someone in the audience just spontaneously spoke up and said, "We are here to burn." And in the moment, that went over everyone's head, his and mine. And so it wasn't addressed, but I went home that night, and that comment stuck in my mind. And I realized that the more I thought about it, the more that consideration and the conversation around it expands exponentially. I mean, it leads to all kinds of possibilities for consideration of why we're in this fix. When you look at the fact that human beings exclusively can manipulate fire out of all other life forms on the planet, we have the exclusive ability to manipulate fire. It's a fascinating conversation. And listening to James earlier on, I came up with a suggestion, a possibility. I would like to continue this conversation with people like James at some future point, and would be willing to leave my contact information with your engineer there, so that if anyone else is interested in in talking about this in more depth could do so.
Yeah, please do that. I think Steve maybe has taken note. Is Steve listening? Steve, will you get Boris's contact info? And yeah, just stay on the line after you get off the air. And I'm sort of embarrassed to mention this, but I have put out my email address. I haven't done it for a while. I have a special KBOO email address or Gmail KBOO email address that maybe even you, Boris, have written me at. But I've sort of put it out there with this very ambitious idea that I would like connect people up. And, you know, of course, my own difficulties, inabilities, lack of time, whatever, get in the way and, you know, the best laid plans. But anyway, I will put out there again, and I would like to, you know, we'll keep doing this. I'll keep doing this show. We'll keep talking about these things. And, you know, things may click, they may not click, but at least we're talking, and, you know, the more people get hooked up and talk, the more things can happen. So it's Paul R. KBOO, Paul R. KBOO at gmail.com is that address. If you want to, you know, I'll try to hook you up with other people. That's one thing I can do. If you want to write me, if it's somebody who you really are interested in, you want to connect up with. Anyway, so thank you, Boris, for those thoughts. Are you still there?
No, he's gone.
Okay, Boris is gone. So he's given Steve his contact info. Yeah, I was gonna read. I've got all these books lined out in front of me. The Death of Nature by Carolyn Merchant, Women, Ecology, and the Scientific Revolution. Origins, a John Zerzan reader. When Society Becomes an Addict by Ann Wilson Schaaf. Heresies Against Progress and Other Illusions by John Gray. Inversions, this is another of my new obsessions. A Study of Warped Consciousness, a self-published book by Bert Alpert. I had all these books I was gonna read from, but I'm glad it did spark a conversation. I would like to continue this conversation in some form. I'm not sure whether in this morning talk format is the best or most effective way, but it does seem like people are interested in this. You know, decolonization is a very real thing. There's a worldwide movement against colonization. There's people who talk about Cascadia, is something I'd like to talk more about. Yeah, it's all there to be looked at and gone into in greater depth. My name's Paul. This is KBOO Community Radio, Wednesday Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned.
I'm Monica Beamer.
And I'm Mike Crenshaw. We're KBOO's new co-station managers. We're excited to be a part of the KBOO community. We're starting a new weekly feature on Wednesdays at 5:45 p.m. News from the Boo will give you an inside look into what's happening at KBOO, including upcoming events, station news, special programming, and future goals and plans for the station.
Be sure to tune in this Wednesday and every Wednesday after the KBOO Evening News for News from the Boo, an insider look into your community radio station.
Don't let Rupert Murdoch control your newscast. The KBOO Evening News provides breaking news about local issues, from water fluoridation to immigration raids. We bring you daily coverage of what's going on in Portland, Cascadia, and around the world. Tune in every weekday at 5 for the KBOO Evening News on KBOO, your community radio station.
I'm Monica Beamer.
Whoa, we already heard that one. Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO Portland. Here's what we have coming up for you this morning.